Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have something special for you. We're going to go deep into the SSP and COG, secret space and continuity of government programs. I'm going to show you the links between these programs and how you can't have one without the other. These programs wield a tremendous influence over our daily lives, from policy decisions, black budget allocations, political blackmail, and deep state machinations. Now, to help inform this presentation, I'll draw on the work of three experts who've given us a solid foundation outside of the official story to get some real answers. Former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz, Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph Farrell, and UC Berkeley professor Peter Dale Scott. Connecting the dots from the SSP, the Secret Space Program, to the COG, Continuity of Government Program, will give us the key to over 70 years of covert intelligence operations and secret finance corridors that have set the tone for 21st century living and the major crises that we see in the world today. The future of the global economy and the vast amount of progress that can be made here on Earth rests with our ability to understand what's really happening in space and why it's been kept largely secret for over 70 years. Who's really in charge here on Earth anyway? Let's go find out.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
The Dark Journalist Special Report. SSP and COG, Secret Space Program and Continuity of Government, Part 1, featuring an in-depth four-part look at 70 years of deep state covert operations. Now, let's go join Dark Journalist Daniel List.
It's great to be here to go over the deep state and the breakaway civilization. You know, one of the first things we have to do is just get a handle on where the Secret Space Program comes from and why it's important in the first place. So if we want to get into the Secret Space Program, what we have to know for sure is where it came from. And the Secret Space Program really was started with the invention of the National Security Act, which is something that happened under Truman in 1947, and shortly thereafter led to the development of the Central Intelligence Agency. What they did, in fact, when they created this, was they created a secret corridor of budget money that they could allocate without the public knowing about it. And that secret finance corridor became the black budget. And so many of these space programs that are not in the public purview come out of that black budget. So, you know, once we got into that, it was hard to get us out. And the bigger it got, you know, the worse the situation became and the bigger the wall of secrecy became. Now, if we go into the 50s, you know, I've done a series of interviews with Professor Peter Dale Scott over at Berkeley. And he's the man who coined the term the deep state, which basically separates a separate state that's operating underneath the official government that controls the real levers of power. And a lot of that deep state really is controlled by Wall Street interests and intelligence interests and Department of Defense interests. So to really get to know it, we have to get to know what are their ambitions and what were they about. Well, in the 50s, one of the things that they developed that would become a major tool for the Secret Space Program was something called continuity of government operations. And this was allocated millions of dollars, and it was a gigantic program to build bases underground to basically survive a nuclear holocaust with the Russians at the time. Now, when they did this, they had such a high level of secrecy that they could channel any funding and different types of intelligence structures into this structure of continuity of government. So these underground bases were in fact setting up a separate government to run everything that we would see on the surface. And in fact, we'll see a little bit later that this covert government eventually overthrew the one on top. And that became a big goal of theirs. So one of the other interesting things that we'll notice about COG and the players inside of it is that the players very often show up in what Professor Scott calls deep state or deep events. And these deep events would be major events that cause policy changes. So you can imagine anything from 9/11 to the major crash and financial coup d'etat of 2008. You go further back in history, Iran-Contra or Watergate or the JFK assassination, and you'll see this thread of people who had worked in COG, continuity of government. So we're going to get we're going to see how they play into the secret space program, because it's a major piece of it. You don't get the secret space program without the COG underground base operations that were set up basically as a secondary government. Originally, in the case of an emergency, and further we got down the road, just as kind of status quo, calling the shots from this secondary feature. The other thing that we need to remember going back to the kind of deep state history of this is that President Kennedy was a congressman in the late 40s when the National Security State and the National Security Act were set up. And he had a close friend named James Forrestal. They were both Catholics, and Forrestal became the first defense secretary under Harry Truman. Eventually, Forrestal supposedly went crazy and jumped out a window. Well, we think he was helped along pretty well with that because he had gotten very close to the UFO files. But one of the things that we can see is that in that close relationship, whatever Forrestal knew, he certainly would have shared with a close friend like Kennedy, who he had taken actually in 1946 to view post-war Berlin and the reconstruction effort that was going on there. And so when Forrestal got a lot of information about these crashes, we find that there are actually reports from something called the Planetary Group. And those reports show that President Kennedy was briefed as part of a national security team in Congress on these crashes that were happening and this wave of sightings that were going on back then.
Here, the late, great author Jim Mars gives us the details that show JFK was aware of the UFO question as early as 1947.
He knew. He knew. In fact, there's a real interesting tie-in there. Back in the 40s, there was a government group called the Interplanetary Phenomenon Group, which when I first heard about that, I said, oh, that's just got to be some kind of joke, you know, but it was very real. It's been documented. There are documents now found from this group. And in 1947, they actually produced a report on the Roswell crash. And it is pretty specific and pretty out there. They talked about two different landing zones, LZ1, LZ2. They talked about multiple bodies being found. They talked about the whole thing. They gave names, dates, places. They also were the first that I know that mentioned that before the crash in Roswell, there were all kinds of sightings around New Mexico. And in fact, they had been picking up unidentified objects on their radar. And it was becoming quite a concern to them through the first part of that week in July preceding the crash at Roswell. But in the back of this report, it said one of the few members of Congress to have knowledge of this is Representative John F. Kennedy of Massachusetts.
Huh.
And it said he had served in naval. He was in naval intelligence. I was an officer in naval intelligence, and that he apparently had a source of information within the office of the Secretary of the Air Force, Secretary of the Air Force, I guess. At that time, it had been the Army Air Corps. Now, that's true. Most people only know Kennedy's background as being the commander of the PT-109, right, in which he got sunk by a Japanese destroyer in the South Pacific. But it's true that prior to that, he had served in Washington with naval intelligence. So see, that tells you that this is a legitimate report. And that tells you that Kennedy, as far back as 1947, knew that the Roswell was the real deal and that something very unearthly had happened there.
So the secret space program was in part set up just as a natural development of what we're going to do with the regular space program. But there were elements to it where the national security state had secrets, and they needed to preserve those secrets. So in addition to building NASA, which is our ostensibly public program, not even supposed to be a military one, of course, it's controlled by the military, they had to set up this secondary structure, and these were the roots of it. But somebody like Kennedy was very informed about this because he had been close to Forrestal. He had been briefed on these crashes as early as 1947. So by the time we get into the White House with Kennedy in 1960, this is somebody who's very wise to what's going on in the deeper levels of the deep state. And, you know, it's going to cost him, as we'll see as time comes along. But one of the major clashes that he had with the CIA, which is a major representative of the deep state, was about sharing the UFO data that they had with the Soviet Union at the time. And the CIA didn't want to share it with the Russians. They were saying that it's national security secrets. This is too important. But Kennedy wanted to reduce nuclear tensions. He had something where he wanted to have a joint space race. He wanted to have, you know, something together with the Russians in space so that we wouldn't have these nuclear tensions. And he also saw the UFO factor as very important because he said, you know, what if they see one of these ships over their nuclear bases? We're going to have a nuclear incident. We have to share this kind of intel with them. So there's a lot of resistance in there. And a lot of those documents really didn't come out until the last decade that really highlighted that Kennedy was pushing for this through NASA and directing him to do it. Through a series of memos, we've been able to discover this is truth. Now, when we look at this period and what was achieved, really, was Kennedy brought them to the brink by saying, you know, this is how we're going to do this. And he was certainly a lot more open about the alien issue in general. So when Kennedy was assassinated, the entire program around this went even blacker and went into more secrecy. And there was a huge wall of secrecy built up around it. Now, one of the things I did was I interviewed someone named Douglas Caddy. And Caddy was the Watergate lawyer who got the burglars, basically represented the burglars in court. And he's a real historical figure, and you can find him, you know, showing up in these very unusual intervals in history. He's just quite a player on the major stage. And Caddy gave his first interview on his close friendship with E. Howard Hunt, who was one of the major players in the CIA, and was eventually sent to prison for his role in the Watergate burglaries. Well, Caddy told me that, and this was in 2015, and of course that's available at darkjournalist.com if you want to watch the whole interview. It's 3 hours, and he really goes into some kind of detail. But he told me that he met with his good friend Hunt just before he got sent to prison, and he asked him what they were doing there in the first place, breaking into the DNC to find these files. And the interesting thing is that Hunt told him, well, the reason we went in there was to find these Kennedy assassination files through Cuban intelligence that would link to this program the CIA participated in to kill Fidel Castro, and some of those players were used eventually in the JFK assassination. And then Caddy asked him point blank, why were your comrades at the CIA interested in assassinating sitting U.S. president? What happened there? And Caddy told him at his last meeting, Hunt turned to Caddy and said, actually, John F. Kennedy, the reason he was killed was because he was going to give our biggest national secret away.
Now, what was our biggest national security secret that the CIA was so worried JFK was going to give up, and why the Watergate break-in? Let's go to this clip of my interview with Douglas Caddy.
And he said, we believe that within the Democratic National Committee, there were Cuban government intelligence reports on the Kennedy assassination. And this came out of nowhere for me. I said, well, why would there be any documents in the, why would it be important to have, to find out what was in those documents in the Democratic National Committee? And he said there would be things in there dealing with the Kennedy assassination. And I said, well, tell me more. And at that point, he just held up his hands and said, well, there'd be no more discussion of this, okay? And so that was really the end of our discussion. At that point, we had the remainder of the dinner. We discussed his going into prison and my circumstances and his children's circumstances. He had 4 children, and his wife had been killed, and there was a question of how they would be taken care of while he was in prison and so forth. And so we went out, we paid the bill, of course, and we went outside and on the sidewalk, and we were getting ready to, he was getting ready to depart. And I thought, well, I would make one final attempt to find out more about the Kennedy assassination. That was really kind of interesting to me. And I said, well, why was Kennedy assassinated? Why was it important that Kennedy be assassinated? He said, President Kennedy was assassinated because he was about to give our most vital secret, singular secret, to the Soviets. And I said, our most vital secret to the Soviets? I said, what could that be? And he said, the alien presence. And at that point, he just reached out and shook my hand and turned and walked away. But in all these things, in Watergate, all these things, I remember. You know, it was an indelible memory on my part. But at the time, I didn't know what to make of it because I was not an expert on the Kennedy assassination.
And this is the CIA's point of view, which is that JFK was going to inform the public about the alien presence, therefore he has to be eliminated. There's many things that have been offered for the assassination of Kennedy that we've seen, but that's particularly interesting because it relates to the secret space program and how much they value this topic. So we have to really take pause and look at Caddy and see that he's this historical figure. He had a documented close relationship with Hunt. I've talked to Hunt's son, St. John Hunt, and he verifies that he and Howard Hunt were very close. So this is a conversation between two friends rather than a CIA smokescreen. I think we're getting right to the truth there. So what does that mean? As we go on through the 60s and we see the development of the space program, you know, we launched to the moon in 69, but there's a lot of questions around it. And then there's a bogus story that comes out, well, we didn't go to the moon. And what it is there's a lot of anomalies around that because part of the technology is starting to go black. And we don't want to reveal what we're using to get there and get back. And we don't want to reveal what we encountered when we get there. And that's a whole other story, but it's pretty fascinating. So the secret space program goes even darker at that point. And when you go into the 70s, all the funding for the space program and all the things they spent money on, for some reason they stop. And they do things like Voyager and stuff, but the manned missions that were supposed to take us to Mars and all these colonies and all the rest of it, they're a thing of the past. And budgetary reasons are cited, but the money was already allocated. And in many cases, the ships and rockets were already built. So this is not a legitimate thing that happened. In the culture, in the late 70s, you see there's a huge renaissance around the UFO idea. In movies like Close Encounters are there. Even President Carter said that he was, the witness to a major UFO sighting himself. So we're looking at a very interesting situation as we come into the 80s with Ronald Reagan. And what he does is suddenly the whole concept gets turned into the weaponization of space. So this idea that was coming out of the 70s of almost like friendly ETs and, the kind of mystery of UFOs, suddenly it's getting turned into, we need to weaponize space because there's an enemy. And ostensibly the enemy they were pointing to was Russia at the time. But we'll find out as we go further along here that the strange comments that Reagan is making at places like the UN, for example, he's talking about an alien threat. And even his aides are like, why is he talking about this? Even symbolically, it makes him look ridiculous. Like, well, what's going on here? And it recently came out that Gorbachev was talking at a panel in New York, and this is on record, so it's not just a word-of-mouth story. There's a video available of it, where Gorbachev said that during the Reykjavik summit, that Reagan took him aside and said, look, I need to know if you'll join with us to fight an alien threat. If it comes down to it, will you be on board with us? And Gorbachev was completely surprised by the question, but he said Reagan was absolutely dead serious. And in the room where he's saying this now, where he's admitting this years later, there are people like Kissinger and Charlie Rose and all the rest of it. And if you do look at that videotape, you'll find that they're strained faces before they all break out in laughter saying, oh, yeah, well, he was just pulling his leg or something.
So let's go now to this clip of Gorbachev discussing Reagan's request for Russian aid to fight an alien threat.
President Reagan suddenly said to me, what would you do if the United States were attacked by someone from outer space? Would you help us? I said, no doubt about it. He said, we too. So that's interesting. I'm sorry for having interrupted you, but it was an interesting moment.
But, this is getting at the secret, which is that Reagan had been getting reports about what was out in space, and he decided the way to deal with it was to create this SDI Star Wars program. The Strategic Defense Initiative was going to be something that could blast missiles from space. But the people who actually set it up we'll find as we go along here, there's a two-way version of what it does. It controls things on Earth, and it also looks out into the universe. So they were observing off-world civilizations. They were observing craft that were operating. And certainly they had their own knowledge of the alien presence over the years. But, you know, as the technology advanced, they're getting more and more sightings out there. They're seeing the operations that are going on, and they decide to make themselves a player. Now, the weaponization of space is actually forbidden under treaties since 1968, international treaties that the United States has signed on to. Therefore, anything that they do in space to develop a space program to monitor these things is actually not legal. So again, the secrecy factor goes major. Now, when they showed these things to Reagan, suddenly the Iran-Contra funding and all these stories come and all that fraud goes off the charts. And there's a lot of money that's missing from government, and there's all these things going on. And again, we see continuity of government players show up. People like Oliver North, who's a major continuity of government player. Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney. These people show up again in the 80s during these scandals when this money is disappearing. And ostensibly, it's because, you know, they're involved in these programs.
But actually what it means is they're representing the deep state interest on this and trying to keep the story quiet about what the real money was being used for, which was the secret investment in space. So we can see these COG players have a role in controlling the development of these programs. The Reagan period is the pivotal turn of both the COG and the SSP. The COG planning guaranteed the wall of secrecy would stay in place around any emergency threat to the U.S., not just a nuclear one. It's a very important distinction. COG planning was moving into space in the guise of the SDI Star Wars program, but in fact, the emerging threat that they were dealing with was, as Reagan intimated in the famous UN speech, an alien threat.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Stay tuned as DJ connects the dots between the secret space program and continuity of government.
Now, we were going along here and we were finding about continuity of government players that got involved with the secret space program. And it's interesting, actually, when we take a look at it, because those types of players and the channels that they're associated with show up over and over again in these deep events. But I also have found them over and over again around the secret space program. So we're going to take a look at them here. But one thing I want to point out, since we were going through some kind of chronology of these events, is something that was happening in the 90s is very interesting to snapshot, which is a group inside the deep state wanted to go for some kind of disclosure around UFOs. And we saw things like the disclosure conferences be the culmination of those. But we had people out there like John Mack, who was a professor at Harvard, and he, you know, really took a lot of abuse around the topic by taking the subject of abductions very seriously. You know, and he showed up on Time magazine as, like, you know, madman of the year and things like that. So they really took him down. But the interesting thing that he was getting at, which was that there were a number of people around this subject of UFOs that you don't get at this point, like very kind of credentialed people, people with deep backgrounds. And this was an effort, along with other things that were happening in the 90s. You know, you had things like the X-Files and you had these movies and the whole culture was gearing up for a real recognition of the UFO topic. And then you had an incident, which was the Phoenix Lights, that happened in late 1997 or early 1997. And this, again, was something that you don't see too often. It was kind of like a movie script because it was a craft sitting over a major city. And it seemed pretty well designed because at that point they were actually looking, most of the city was looking for a comet. So therefore, I've always thought of the Phoenix Lights as a kind of engineered incident, because, you know, you see that many people out there looking skyward, and then you give them these crafts sitting over a major city, you're going to have a very interesting test one way or another, whether you're a secret government producing massive technology and advanced crafts, or if you're an off-world civilization and you want to see how this public would react to you. So, you know, we see this great kind of rise in consciousness, and there are people, and there are shows like Coast to Coast suddenly, and, you know, there's a great interest around it. Then 9/11 happens, and we kind of drop the hammer on the whole thing. Everything goes black again. Subject of UFOs goes deep, underground. It's not widely celebrated in culture at that point, and everything is about this terror thing. Very low energy period where our thoughts were reduced to terrorism and things along that line, and wars and all the rest of it. But interestingly enough, again, the people who show up on the scene around 9/11 are people like Cheney and Rumsfeld, who were associated with this continuity of government group back in the 80s. And one of the things that Professor Scott notes about Rumsfeld is that he was actually the CEO of a chemical company at the time. He didn't even have a role in government, even though he was a former defense secretary. And, you know, Rumsfeld became the youngest defense secretary, and he then came into office some 30 years later as a defense secretary again. So it's a very unusual character that we can see as a regular representative of the deep state. But at the time he was working on this continuity of government plan, Cheney and Rumsfeld had changed the plan from being about surviving a nuclear holocaust to surviving any emergency. It's a pretty interesting change. And one of the programs that they worked on also were programs for rounding up citizens in the case of an emergency. So that program was called Rex 84, and Cheney and Oliver North worked on it in the 80s. But these programs became legacies of what the government got by the time we got around to 9/11, because they had these programs in place. They were already built up. So one of the things I think that's important to note is when we get these deep events and we're seeing these continuity of government people show up over and over again, we have to start to wonder, what is that continuity of government group all about? And what's their role in relation to the secret space program? So we get to this period where there's a crack in the national security state secrecy. And that's the Gary McKinnon case where, you know, for brevity's sake, he was a NASA hacker who broke into NASA's computers, and he really showed that there was an off-world officers list that was in there that he discovered. And this idea that there was a group that was assembled who were not astronauts, but were off-world officers, much like a Navy or an Air Force would have, was really struck a chord, I think, and became over time something very important for people to pay attention to. And so the secret space program finally, after all these rumors and things had persisted over years, finally had something where, you know, this guy may have actually gotten a glimpse of the list of the people who go out there and all the reasons around why the secret space program existed in the first place. And we saw there were a series of whistleblowers who came through a lot of the programs that were around in that period, a little later, like Project Camelot. They had these people who talked about being in these programs. So then one of the things that I noticed when you look at the record is that this idea of an off-world officers list leads people from a series of different fields, like Oxford scholar Joseph Farrell, former Assistant Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz, with government experience, with scholarly experience, and they're getting together this data around the secret space program. And one of the things that Catherine Fitz, who really, I think between her Wall Street knowledge and her knowledge of the government, having been in both the Bush and Clinton administrations before she left them both, and they took her to court and all the rest of it, was she studied their budget allocations, and she noticed that there were a series of unadjusted, undisclosed changes in their documents that provided for missing money. And we were looking at every major agency, but the ones that she included in her own reports were NASA, the Department of Defense, and HUD, where she had been the assistant secretary, knew it quite well. The other thing that she noticed when she was in government is that military contractors, like Boeing, were controlling the databases for these agencies. So they made it very difficult to retrieve records to do comparisons. And she pointed out the famous Rumsfeld saying that there were $2.3 trillion missing just before 9/11 from the Department of Defense budget. Well, her own examination of that and the Department of Defense's recent one that came out, their recent estimate was $7.5 trillion. So when we're looking at numbers like that, you know, you say, well, how much can you reconcile $7.5 trillion? It's not easy. So her own estimates got us up to $40 trillion missing from the federal budget. And $40 trillion will buy you a secret space program, very dynamic in space and well-developed. So we still don't see major developments in our own budget. As a matter of fact, the NASA budget for the last year was lower than it had been since 1965 levels, and that's before the moonshot. So we're talking bottom-of-the-barrel funding for NASA. So where's that money going with all this development in space that we're seeing? Well, the development really that we're seeing is the privatization of space. So you have companies like Bigelow Aerospace and SpaceX, and they're sending rockets up there. And the idea is that they're going to do space tourism, and there's a series of economics opportunities that are available up there. And they call this the space economy. And this is something that we all have to get on board with, because this is where their future is going. This is where they've placed that money. Thank you for joining me for this in-depth examination of the secret space program and continuity of government. You can find more special reports, deep interviews, and documentaries by going to www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com for the upcoming episodes of the Dark Journalist Report on SSP and COG. Dark Journalist. Go for truth in 2017. The deepest questions, the biggest secrets, the darkest mysteries. Dark Journalist. Go for truth. With top guests like Graham Hancock.
Graham, how do we as a society escape the grip of the deep state in the 21st century?
Rather than spending trillions of dollars every year on building up our armies and our weapons of mass destruction and creating a climate of hatred and fear and suspicion, we should be uniting as a human race.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, what is the issue that's holding us back and destroying prosperity?
We have a system which has got a negative return on investment, it's killing human productivity, and where it's going is inhuman.
Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, you've been fighting against secrecy your whole life. How are we doing in this battle?
There is a kind of energy and synergy that you and I have because we are both trying so hard in so many facets to get to the bottom of what is the truth.
Dark Journalist. Go for truth. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special fall discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll receive exclusive member benefits, including access to the complete high-quality audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, and subscriber-only content, including bonus show material. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist. This is the year. Now is the time.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Join us now and go for truth.